All right. Good morning. Good to see everybody this morning. Hope that we can have a good discussion in our class this morning as we continue to talk about our study of the book of Ecclesiastes. Just by way of preparation for next week, my intention is to spend the bulk of the class looking at some of the blessings that Solomon writes about that take place in this life. We spent a lot of time talking about the fact that the theme of the book is vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And yet sprinkled throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, there are tidbits of things that Solomon identifies that are blessings and pleasures that we should enjoy in this life. And so I'd like to spend the bulk of the class talking about that next week. There are a couple of other small points that I would like to make in regard to the general wisdom literature that Solomon puts forth, but I don't anticipate spending too much time on that. So as you're preparing for next week and reading through the book, be thinking about those things. As far as our class today, we intend to look at Solomon's wisdom concerning business. Or you could say concerning work, concerning the labor that we do. So we'll look at that this morning. But before we begin, Josh, will you lead our opening prayer?
Our great God and Father, we are thankful to you for this time, this morning, this day that you've provided us, and the time we have to study your word, to draw closer to you through the study of your word and through the fellowship that we share. And pray that the things that we learn from your servant Solomon can allow us to be more wise in your ways and in our dealings in this world. Ask that our study can help us better understand you and your wisdom, and help us to use these things to make good choices throughout our lives, to have wisdom, to help others, and use your wisdom to guide our path. Pray that you be with all of us this morning as we study. Help us to have open minds to receive your word, and soft hearts to allow it to change us. I pray this in the name of your Son. Amen.
All right, so this morning we want to talk about what Solomon has to say about things concerning business, if you will. Many of you have been in my class that I teach on the Christian in business, and some of the points that we'll talk about this morning, you will have heard in that class. In that particular class, we dedicate a whole semester to looking at this subject of the Christian in business. But as far as our class this morning, we do want to see what Solomon has to say, and actually he has quite a lot to say about that particular topic. So when God created man, what was the very first thing that God told man to do?
Work.
Okay, so he created man, and he told him that he was to till and keep the garden. That is very important, I think, for all of us to understand that it is inherently created in us this need or this desire to accomplish work. God did not put us on this planet so that we could sit around and eat bonbons all day. That was not what he created us to do. He intended for man to work. And I would make a very strong argument that if you have the perception that when we end this life and we go to our reward to be with God, that we're going to sit on a cloud for eternity and eat bonbons, I don't believe that's what's going to happen. I believe that God will have work for us in heaven just as he did for us here on earth. Now, what that looks like, I can't tell you, but I do believe that very much. So the very first things, very first lesson I think that we need to pull out of Ecclesiastes is that Solomon says work hard. In chapter 9 and verse 10, he says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, For there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you're going. What if your hand finds to do, do it with your might. I believe this speaks to an attitude that we should have as we approach work. You've all heard the saying, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing right. And there is certainly truth in that. If we approach our work in a haphazard, lazy, just barely get it done attitude, what's going to be the result of that? Okay, so obviously the end result's not going to be great, and we'll kind of talk about that a little bit. What else? When you do a job half-ended, are you happy with it? No. Okay. There's no satisfaction to be had when you approach your work in a haphazard or a lackadaisical attitude. You know, true satisfaction is never, ever accomplished in doing something half done. You know, at the very best, when you do something in a mediocre fashion, the very best you can say at the end of the day is, well, it was okay, or it was good enough. How often in life do we go around saying things, well, it was okay? If you went to a restaurant, and that was your response when you came out of the restaurant when somebody asked you how your meal was, and you say, well, it was okay. So what are you saying in that?
It wasn't great.
Wasn't necessarily bad. It wasn't terrible. It was edible. But at the same time, it wasn't great. And the same thing really applies to any labor that we have. And this can be said of our work, our education, personal endeavors. I mean, in work, if every day you get up and you go to work so that you can bring home a paycheck, and you do not approach that work with real fervor and real zeal, at the end of the day, there's just not much satisfaction. And I would make the argument that you, in this world, we got a lot of people that just really hate their job, that they hate getting up in the morning and they hate going to work and they just try to get through it. They're miserable. Well, maybe part of the reason that they're not so happy and the fact that maybe they're miserable in what they're doing is that they're not putting anything into it. You know, if you put something into an effort, you're going to get something back out of it. And so as we talk about how we approach our work, that's certainly true. What about our education? I mean, we've got a lot of students here at Twin City that are here to get an education. What happens if those students approach their education in this same lackadaisical manner? What are they going to get out of it? Y'all are quiet this morning.
Not a lot.
Sorry?
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
Okay.
They may not survive Texas A&M, and we've all known our fair share of friends and people that have come through A&M that washed out, that just didn't make it. But I would also put this in their mind that if you don't put much into your education, you're not going to get very much out of it. The reality is, if you are training to be an engineer or a veterinarian or, you know, a business student, if you don't put some effort into that, you're going to walk away and you might have kind of ooched through and you might have been able to have gotten your degree at the end of the day. But when you go out into the real world to try to exercise and use that job, how good are you going to be at it? You're just kind of self-perpetuating this problem of mediocrity, that you're going to end up in such a way that, you know, you're going to approach your work the same way you approached your education, and you're never going to get much satisfaction out of it. Even the same thing could be said for personal endeavors. You know, one of my favorite ones is mowing your grass. You know, how many people just love to mow grass? There's probably a few, okay? But when you mow your grass and you get out in front of your yard and you're really meticulous about it. You make sure that all your lines are going the right way, and you've done all your weed trimming, and when you step back and you look at it, it looks good. And there is a great deal of personal satisfaction that you receive out of that. And that is the way that God intended us to approach everything that we do in life. That can be said for mowing your grass. It can be said for, you know, somebody that's preparing a meal. When you put something great into it and it turns out really well, there's a lot of satisfaction to be had for that. So as we think about it, God expects us to work hard. And at the end of the day, a lousy job is just exactly that. You know, that's what you get. You know, and here's my illustration of the yard. That would drive me crazy. Okay? In fact, those of you guys that are fathers, that if your son went out and did that to your yard, what would your reaction be?
He mowed the yard, thank you.
Sorry?
I'd say, thank you, he mowed the yard.
Okay. That would not be my reaction. My reaction would probably be go out and do it again and do it right. And I know some of you guys as dads, you have probably had that conversation with your sons. So, you know, as we think about this, you know, we should approach life and we should approach work. We should work hard. And why should we always strive for excellence? I mean, why do that?
God is excellent.
Okay. Our Father in heaven is excellent.
We want to be like Him.
Okay, we want to be like Him. Chandler?
I think a big part of it in my mind, what comes to mind is Colossians 3, when it's talking about bondservants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. And then talking about how, you know, your inheritance is coming from the Lord, not from the people that you work for. But James also comes to mind as well about how our relationship in this world largely has to do with our relationships with other people. So in my mind, that's where a lot of the wisdom and importance of this comes from, of striving for excellence, is because of the way that we come off to other people. Not that we need to be perfect, of course, or that everybody needs to be perfect in order to be following God, but that I just like how it says in verse 22, not by eye service, but or as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. So I just feel like it more so has to do with how we come off to other people, that we're working hard because we serve God, we have purpose in our life, not because we just want to walk around and do everything perfectly so people think we're perfect.
Okay, and that's a great point. You know, as we think about, as we strive for excellence in every aspect of our life, it is that we should be examples, so that we can be examples of what God would have us to be. One more comment, Aaron.
In the gospel, in our gospel meeting recently, Brother Dawson had that illustration about the man who was baptized or wanted to study the gospel just based on what he saw in his coworker, and he said, "I want that." And so there's a reason behind the reason even that we're given. You know, it's not just that we want to be to work for the Lord, but the reason for that is so that when other people see us, they will want what we have. They'll want to be excellent like we are. If as Christians we are mediocre, or we are, you know, just getting by, or we are doing the bare minimum, and other people see that in us, then they're going to assume that that's how Christians act. And we have to be better than that.
Good point. My dad was a very wise man. And I can distinctly remember conversations that he and I had from the time I was a little boy. And one of the things that he always preached to me and my brother was that it doesn't matter what you do in life, but whatever you do, whatever you choose, be the best of it. There's always room at the top. And what Dad was trying to teach us was that we should strive for excellence. You know, because if you strive for mediocrity, you'll hit it every time. It's not hard to be mediocre in our approach to life or our work. But if you strive for excellence, then as we've talked about, the example that you set is what God would have us to do. And quite frankly, how many people do you know that really work hard and strive for excellence in everything that they do? How many people you know like that are resounding failures? You don't. Those people are always successful. And so, you know, Solomon tells us that we should work hard and we should strive for excellence. This passage was certainly referenced, whatever you do, do it, work heartily, as unto the Lord and not to men. And then 1 Corinthians 3:17, so whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. If we keep that in our mind as we go throughout our daily work, that whatever I'm doing, no matter really how drudgery it is or how boring it may be, if we do it as unto the Lord, we're always going to do a good job. So lesson number two that comes from Ecclesiastes is this idea of casting your bread upon the waters. In chapter 11 and verse 1, we read, "Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days." This is a principle that Solomon sets forth in this book. And at first, if you think about that, it seems a little bit of an exercise in futility. Throwing your bread or your seed upon the water seems to be an exercise that you're just going to throw it out there and nothing is going to happen. And yet Solomon tells us we just don't know what the results are going to be from this idea of casting our bread upon the water. And sometimes we can be absolutely astounded by the results that are achieved. Now, if you study this very closely, I believe there are two approaches to this passage. The first one is this idea of being generous, that in everything you do in life, you are very generous. You are generous in your giving to other people. You give to people despite the fact that they deserve it. You know, you cast your bread upon the waters. You're always full of being generous and giving. Then there's an element that this is practical business advice. But the reality of the thing is that in application, the results are exactly the same. Whether you are casting your bread upon the water by spreading generosity and kindness and good deeds, or as a business person or an employee that you are going about, you know, spreading your bread upon the waters from a standpoint of an investment or time that you're going to put into people or products, all of these things have the same result. And many times it's very, very unexpected. There's numerous examples of this, both in principle, or this principle in both business and in personal life. This morning, I was showing Gretchen a video that I had seen years ago, and it's a true story. And the story goes like this. There's a little boy in some Indonesian country that gets caught stealing some medicine. And there is a merchant that sees this happen, and he interjects, and he takes money out of his pocket, and he pays for the medicine, and he looks down at the little boy, and he says, "Is your mom sick?" And the little boy nods yes, and so the merchant pays for the medicine, and he calls for his daughter to bring some food to send home to the sick woman. And so fast forward, time goes by, and 30 years later, this same merchant is in his store, and a homeless man comes up to ask for food. And the man gladly gives him some food. And in the process of doing that, the man falls over with some kind of severe medical condition, perhaps a brain tumor, something along those lines. And so the next scene is, here's this man in this hospital, and his daughter is given this bill or this estimate of what his medical procedures are going to cost, and it is this astronomical number. And she's at a total loss. And so the next scene you see is that the business is for sale, the home is for sale, and it fast forwards to her sitting beside her father's bed, you know, while he's recovering. And when she wakes up, there's this piece of paper laying beside her, and it's the bill. And it said, paid in full 30 years ago by some medicine and a cup of soup. That's exactly the principle of what we're talking about. You cast your bread upon the waters in an act of generosity that you cast it forth, and you never know how it's going to come back. In this particular instance, and this was a true story, you know, it came back in an exponential way. That little boy that received a cup of soup and some medicine came back and saved the life of the man that was kind to him. And so this idea of casting your bread upon the water, it can come back many times a hundredfold. When you think about it in terms of business, you know, that person that is the delivery driver or perhaps the secretary, how you treat them and how you treat everyone you come in contact with sometimes will pay great dividends, because sometimes that simple person that was the delivery driver or the secretary or whatever, you know, through life, they advance. And sometimes they might go on to be the purchasing agent for your biggest client. Don't think that they won't forget how you treated them when they were a lowly person. You know, cast your bread upon the waters. You know, from a idea of this idea of big fish, little fish, you know, how do we approach that? You know, in business, you know, everybody wants to always go after the big fish. Well, I would suggest to you that sometimes pay attention to the little fish, because oftentimes little fish turn into big fish. And I have been in business now for 36 years, and I have seen this principle happen time and time and time again. But one illustration that I will give you is that a number of years ago, I got this very random quote request from a lady that wanted to get an estimate on doing this baby book. And, you know, so I sent her an estimate on that. Well, lo and behold, I get this job, and, you know, I'm visiting with her, and she's actually, we're in Bryan-College Station, she's down in South Houston. And she said, Steve, you know, I sent this quote request out to a dozen companies. You were the only one that responded to it. And I said, well, that's nice. But the moral of the story is that since that initial day, you know, with this lady, I have printed over 100,000 of these baby books for her. All because I took just a little bit of time and threw it on something that really was kind of obscure. I guarantee you, you know, most owners looked at that and said, I don't want to mess with that. That is just not important to me. And this principle comes back, and I have seen it over and over and over again. Pay attention to what you're doing and how you do it in business, because it will come back many times. From a business perspective, that small or obscure investment sometimes can yield exponential results. And this is one of my favorite stories regarding that. In 1958, IBM passed up the chance to buy a young fledgling company that had invented this process of called xerography. They just kind of dismissed it. 2 years later, Xerox was born. Can you imagine what that would have looked like for IBM had they embraced that technology at that time? And then the same company, IBM, in 1977, dismissed a fledgling company on the West Coast by the name of Apple, and considered the personal computer as too small to do serious computing and unimportant to their business. Well, 3 years later, in 1980, Apple put its IPO out and 4.6 million shares, and it came out at $22 a share. On that day, it minted more than 300 millionaires in one day. You know, you see this, and you think about that, you know, sometimes your investments come back to you in a big way. So never ever dismiss that little fish. Because sometimes it could turn around, it could be a really big fish for you. So here's a question I have for you in regard to this. Do we spread our bread upon the waters with the expectation that we're going to get something back out of it? Esther?
Well, I just had a comment. I mean, we're talking about this from a personal business point of view, but I'm looking at it as a charity act. We tend to, if we have and we throw it out, we don't pick and choose who gets it. We tend to do that sometimes. We're like, they're not worthy, they're living this or that, but our charity should extend to everyone. We cast it out, it touches anyone that it falls upon. And we don't really reap a material gain from that, but we do reap a reward from God. And someday in the future, if maybe we're in a bad place, whatever we've done will come back to bless us, that someone will help us out. So, I mean, I see it more of a, from that point of view.
Okay, excellent. Steve?
I had to turn the thing on. I think a lot of times we do expect something in return, but the thing of it is, we really shouldn't be expecting anything like that. If we love our fellow man, if we love our fellow man the way we should, it's like you're scattering seeds when we're talking about evangelism. You're scattering the seeds. It goes wherever. And you'd like to have everything work out favorably, but most of the time it doesn't. But you do it anyway, because I believe that's what God would have us do.
And I think that's really the crux of the matter. This is how God would like us to operate. You know, what is said of the man that sows sparingly? He'll reap sparingly. And so this idea of being generous in every aspect of your life is how God would have us to be. And it's just one of those axioms of life that the way that God's providence works and the way that he set the mechanics of this world to working is that very oftentimes unexpected things come back to us as a result of exercising this principle. We don't do it because, okay, I'm going to be nice to this person over here, whether I'm a businessman or I'm just a Christian, so that I think I'm going to get something out of it. That's just a byproduct. Sometimes it happens, oftentimes it doesn't, but it's just a byproduct. What you're looking for is to have that generous and giving attitude in every aspect of your life, and that's certainly true in business. Brian?
Yeah, so Proverbs 19:17 says that he who is generous to the poor lends to the Lord. And then it says the Lord will repay him. But it's an interesting idea that you do it for God. Yes, you do it for the poor as well, but you have another motivation. That's to do it for the Lord.
Absolutely. So, we're running out of time as I'm going through this. Lesson number three is this idea of don't put all your eggs in one basket. Chapter 11 and verse 2, it says, give a serving to seven and also to eight, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. This idea of putting all your eggs in one basket is never a good idea. You know, it's always a good idea to spread out things. And I would say that that is true in just about every aspect of life. You know, whether you're talking about if you have some money to invest, it's not wise to put it all into one stock, you know, because you've really limited your potential that, you know, something bad could happen. If you diversify that, you know, you have a better chance of a return. You know, if you're a business person, it is a dangerous, dangerous proposition to just have one very large customer, because times change. And sometimes maybe you didn't do anything wrong, but that one customer You know, they went away. And then what happens to you? It's not a good idea just to have one customer. Or by the same token, if you have built your business around one key employee, you're going to get burned every time. That's just a fact of life, because so often that one key person figures out that, hey, I'm pretty good at this. I can do this for myself. Why do I need to do it for somebody else? And then they leave. And many times I've seen it time and time again, that key employee will walk away with a big chunk of your business. So this idea of putting all your eggs in one basket is never a good idea. I mean, and that applies to everything. As a parent, is it a good idea to put all your teenage kids in one car with a teenage driver? Probably not. You know, you are really taking a high risk there. So Solomon talks about that, about, you know, not putting all your eggs in one basket. Jim?
I can't help but think about Enron. Look at all the employees of Enron that had their total retirement in company stock, and then just overnight, that stock was worthless. It's just a good example of what you were talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, that was a horrible situation. Those of us that are old enough to remember, you know, Enron and all of the things that went with that, you know, they were extremely successful. I mean, if you followed their stock, I mean, it was going through the roof. It was, you know, they were making a killing. The problem was it was all based upon a farce, you know, and it finally caught up with them. So all of those employees that worked for that company, you know, ended up losing their retirement. You know, many of them are probably still working today because, you know, of something that happened to that investment. Larry?
I know there's many companies out there that require that a minimum number of executives can fly on the same plane for that exact same reason.
So the principle is true anywhere you go. I mean, let's think about just our own nation. I mean, does the President of the United States, does he always travel with his full cabinet? Absolutely not. There is a contingency plan in place with those guys that if something happens to one, they've got a fallback program. And, you know, even those of us that are a little older remembering that happening with, you know, JFK. You know, we had a president that was assassinated, and thankfully we had a backup plan that, you know, the country still continued on even in spite of that terrible event. Josh?
In examining this principle, because I definitely think the whole thing can be taken in different ways in terms of charity or in business, but I also think about like diversity of experience, diversity of knowledge and stuff like that. So thinking about, you know, surrounding yourself with people who, if they have the exact same lived experience as you, and they're giving you advice, well, you're not gonna be prepared for, you know, when you come to experiences that they have no answer for. So it does feel weird to like kind of approach that in like a gaming way of like, oh, well, I have to get people around me who have different experiences. But I think it's a wise thing to do in terms of the people we surround ourselves with and the people whose advice we go to. If I go to the same person for advice every time, well, that person's naturally going to have some blind spots in their own life. And, you know, have to go to other people to get that full breadth of wisdom.
Very good. All right, so we can hopefully get through some of these. Let's move on to our next point, and that's this idea that Solomon talks about not procrastinating. My father-in-law just turned 84 a few days ago. And a lot of times when Gretchen calls him, she will say, "What words of wisdom do you have to impart to me today?" And one thing that he often says is, says, you know, he's an older man now, he's 84. He says, "If there's anything you want to do in life, do it. If you want to learn to play a musical instrument, do it. If you want to learn to be a photographer, do it. Take advantage of the opportunities before you. Don't procrastinate. Because if you wait, you may never, ever experience that. And the only thing that comes out of that situation is regret." So this idea of procrastination is certainly talked about here in this book. You know, this idea of being decisive and to seize the moment, you know, yes or no. And he gives some excellent illustrations there in beginning in chapter 11 in verse 3 through 6, where we read, if the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if a tree falls in the south or the north, in the place where it falls, there it shall lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know what is the way of the wind, or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes all things. In the morning sow your seed, and in the evening do not withhold your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, either this or that, or whether both alike will be good. What happens to the person that always waits for everything to be just exactly right before they do something? Okay, they never do anything. They just stay stuck in the same place. They never move forward. And we all know people like that. I've got a couple of employees that drive me crazy because they cannot make an independent decision. You know, it's beyond their ability. And the same thing is true in life. If you are always waiting for everything to be just right before I do this or I do that, you are destined to just be stuck in one spot. You know, we have to realize there's just some things in life that you can't change. The farmer has to realize that you can't change the weather. We as people that live in this country have to realize that individually we can't change the economy. You know, it's bigger than we are. It's beyond our individual control. But does that mean that we do nothing? You know, just because maybe all of a sudden the stock market has taken a turn for the worse? Absolutely not. Just like the farmer that if he says, well, it looks like rain, so I don't want to sow my seeds today, or we're in the middle of summer, it's too hot, I don't want to sow my seeds, is he ever going to get a crop? Absolutely not. You know, and we understand that in the realm of agriculture, but it's equally true in everything in life, you know, whether it's our own individual lives or you know, something that we do in business. You know, and I think one of the best examples that I could kind of think of is, I was thinking about this, is you take a person that maybe they start out life as, you know, they're fresh out of college, and, you know, they go to work for a company, and they are given this opportunity to invest in some kind of a retirement fund, whether it's a 401k or whatever vehicle that particular company may use, they're given this opportunity. And so they sit back and they look at that and they say, well, you know, market's not real good right now. I don't want to invest my money. I might lose some money. And what happens is they never jump on board. They never get into the habit of taking a little bit out of every paycheck and putting it aside, and just over the process of time, watching that grow. I mean, I see that amongst my own employees. You know, we offer a 401k to our employees, and relatively few of them actually participate. It blows my mind. But, you know, they just don't want to do that. You know, they want that, you know, instant gratification. But I have seen it time and time again that you can take somebody that just starts out just putting a little bit, and they have on their side the element of time. And regardless of the peaks and valleys of the stock market, that over time, you know, by the time they get to retirement 40 years from now, you know, they have a nice amount that has grown over time. So this idea of procrastination is certainly something that we have to be careful of. You know, seize the moment, be decisive. You may make the wrong decision, but at least you made the decision. You know, and you can, if it's the wrong decision, you can back up and do something else, but don't just be frozen. And then lastly, as we're rapidly coming to the end of the deal, is this idea that we need to work hard, but not too hard. There is more to life than just work. And as we approach our careers, as we approach our work, you know, we have to understand balance and perspective are everything. Chapter 3 and verse 24, there's nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and that he should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. God says that you should take time to enjoy the blessings that come your way in life. You should take pleasure, you should take enjoyment from your work. But work is not the end all everything. We need to understand there are going to be good days and bad days, you know, and we have to look at that. In verse 11, verses 7 through 8, truly the light is sweet and pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. You know, there's just going to be a lot of days that you're going to get up and go to work, and it's going to be a crummy day. It's going to happen. But at the same time, you have to balance that with a perspective of, you know, enjoying the blessings and on those really good days, really savor those moments. Work is necessary. God has commanded it from the beginning. But it is not the end all. Work is an end to a means. We have to work so that we can receive the blessings from that labor. But work itself is not the only thing. You have to strive for balance. No one ever said on their deathbed, I wished I'd spent more time at the office. You need to think about that, because as we go through our lives and we work and we are commanded to work hard, that doesn't mean that it should consume every hour, every waking moment of our life. There are more and other important things. Family, you know, as a dad, you know, if you're never home, what are your children going to turn out like? The office will always call. It will always be ready, wanting your time and your attention. But understand this, that at the end of the day, you can work your career, and the day you retire, within a very short time, you have been replaced, and somebody else has taken your shoes, and they've done it just as well as you did. Okay? So at the end of the day, is that not vanity? So let's think about this in terms of a heavenly perspective and, you know, this idea that even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat. I mean, that's just the reality of it. There's a sign at a junction of an Alaskan highway that reads, choose your rut carefully. You'll be in it for the next 50 miles. Well, there should be a sign in life that reads, when you start your working career, choose your rut carefully. You'll be in it the next 50 years. So as we think about that, let's try to always strive to balance everything we do in life. And God has to be at the very forefront of every aspect of our lives. He needs to be the key. He needs to be the standard by which, you know, we run our lives. And then just remember that God said there's nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and that he should enjoy good in his labor. And always remember that that was from the hand of God. So any other comments? We are just about out of time this morning. All right, thank you for your attention. Next week we will pick up there, and the week following that we will do a review and conclude the class. Thank you.